Several years ago, my oldest son, Jack, enlisted in the Army and shipped out from Raleigh, got to basic training, the processing center in the middle of the night. They rolled in, drill instructor jumped on the bus, immediately started screaming at everybody to get off, get in line and all of that stuff. Got them into the processing center, got them all on the floor. That was where they would at least try to sleep that night, screaming at them all night, and get them ready for all the rigors that they were about to face. And when it finally calmed down, the DI stopped shouting. My son said he was laying there, surrounded by other recruits, enlistees, on the floor, trying to get a little bit of sleep before the real terror began. And I said, later, I said, how did you feel at that point? How did you feel laying there, middle of the night, far from home, surrounded by people you didn't know, knowing or having a suspicion about what was coming? How did you feel? He said, I was really, really angry. I said, I was not expecting that. I said, angry. Why were you angry? Who were you angry at? I thought maybe the drill instructors or the Pentagon or Dad for not getting in his way, or I didn't know who he was angry at. So what do you mean you were angry? Who were you angry at? He said, I was angry at myself. I said, why were you angry at yourself? He said, I was laying there the whole time thinking, what have you done? Why did you do this? Why did you enlist and get into this mess? He said, I was thinking to myself, I do not have what it takes to get through this horror. Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever felt this morning? We're going to look at some things from the book of Exodus, sort of along the same lines that Jay was talking about, but from a different angle. Have you ever felt like you were not up to the challenge that you had to face? Have you ever signed up for something that you then felt like you could not handle? Have you ever been forced into a situation? Has a situation ever been forced on you that you doubted that you could handle? Maybe when you went to college, or those of you who have opened your own business, or those of you who have gotten married, or those of you that had children. Maybe those of you who have been through a traumatic experience that was forced upon you. Something that you have had to deal with that you did not choose and would never have chosen. And every single day you get up and you ask yourself, do I have what it takes to get through this thing today? Have you ever been there? I have been there. Have you ever doubted your ability to handle a situation, then you will very much understand the situation of Moses in Exodus chapter 3. When God comes to Moses, appears to him in, as you will recall, a burning bush, a bush that was on fire but was not being consumed. And from the bush, God speaks to Moses, and he says to Moses, I have chosen you to do what? To bring my people out of Egypt. Moses is called by God to bring the children of Israel out of bondage to the most powerful nation on the face of the earth, a race of slaves, enslaved by the dominant world power, a place, by the way, that Moses had fled as a fugitive wanted by the government for murder. And now God is saying to Moses, I am going to send you. And Moses said what? But, Moses said, but who am I? Verse 11. Of Exodus 3. Who am I to do that? Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever felt like you've been asked to do a job, or you've been given a promotion, or you've been asked to fill a role that needs to be filled, and maybe you accepted it, and then you woke up the next day and went, wait a minute, who am I to be doing this job? So God addresses Moses' concern, and then Moses says, wait a minute, by whose authority? What am I going to tell them is sending me? Who will I say? Because I can't go in there on my own authority. I tried to lead them before, and they just rejected me. Whose authority will I say I'm coming in? And God addresses that. And then finally, to get us into our text for today, which is Exodus chapter 4, Moses says, what if they won't believe me? What if I go to them and I say, you know, the weirdest thing happened. Funny thing happened while I was shepherding my sheep the other day. I ran across a bush that was on fire. And it wasn't being burned up. Well, that's weird enough. But then Moses says it was the weirdest thing. A voice started speaking to me from this bush that's not being burned up. It was the weirdest thing. And very oddly, the bush said to me, I want you to go down and be the leader of all of my people. It was just, Moses says, just the weirdest thing. Can you imagine why Moses wonders, what if they don't believe me? Would you? If I came in here and stood up in this pulpit and told you that the message I was about to give you, I had received as I was walking out of my house, and one of the bushes in my landscaping was on fire but not being burned up, and God spoke to me and said, go to church this morning and give them this message. I would not have gotten that sentence out before you would have drugged me from the pulpit and never allowed me to come back. And that's the position of Moses. What if they will not believe me? That is our text, and what we're going to notice is that God is going to give Moses not just one, but three signs that all go together to prove that God has sent Moses. Three things we'll talk about for a little bit today. Number one, what is a miracle? We're beginning today a series of lessons on miracles in the book of Exodus. The first thing we have to do is figure out what's a miracle, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about that. Listen, I just want to be clear up front. God deserves all glory for everything. We always need to be glorifying God and thanking God for everything that comes into our lives. Every good gift is from where? Every good gift is from above. But we really need to be careful that when we use Bible terms, we use them in Bible ways. There's a lot of that gets messed up that we need to be sure we're getting right. What is a miracle? We need to understand that. What was the purpose of miracles? When God did miracles, what's the purpose of a miracle? And then thirdly, what were the miracles that God first gave Moses to do? He will do many of them, as we will see. But I want to notice the first miracles of Moses at the beginning. So, what is a miracle? I would suggest that there are three components to a definition of a miracle. First of all, it is a physical event. It is something that happens in the physical world. It's something that happens with physical things that can be seen and touched and handled, that you can observe. It's something physical that you can see. Secondly, it is something that is impossible and inexplicable by scientific law. It is scientifically impossible that a miracle took place. It's something that cannot be seen. Even though I ran across doing reading and research this past week, five miracles of Moses scientifically explained. Well, if they are, then what? They're not miracles, because a miracle cannot be scientifically explained. Therefore, it has to have happened. Why? If it's a physical event that cannot be scientifically explained, what's the only explanation for it? It has to be something that God has done. It is possible only by divine causation. Now, I want to talk about, before we talk more about that, I want to talk about what is not a miracle. What is not, what is not necessarily a miracle? Some of the things that I'm going to talk about, some of the things that might appear miraculous, sometimes those do apply to miracles. What I want you to see, though, is that these are not always necessarily miracles. Some folks want to see things as miracles that are not Bible miracles. So again, please understand, I'm not saying that we want to not give credit for all the good things. I'm not saying that at all. God, all the glory and thanks for that. But that doesn't mean that everything that happens is a miracle from God, biblically speaking. We need to be very careful to speak like the Bible speaks and not apply things in a way that the Bible does not. I ran across an article as someone had written encouraging us to be aware of what this author termed little miracles. And she used the word miracles. She said, like that guy that ran the stop sign and we were lucky enough not to get hit, according to her, a miracle. The mechanic said the problem might be a $3,000 fix. Turns out it's only $300. That's a miracle. Our husband came home grumpy with a capital G, and we were all grumpy. And surprisingly, we responded to each other in love. According to the author, a miracle. We were all exposed to the flu and didn't get it. You're feeling kind of frumpy, and the cool soccer moms reveal to you that they enjoy reading your blog. Your daughter ends up on the right team with the right coach, the right girls, and the right parents, and that's a miracle. Now again, I'm not saying that those kinds of things may not be sometimes miraculous. What I'm saying is that sometimes what people want to see as a miracle biblically may not be. Just because it's fortunate does not mean it's a miracle. You pull into the Walmart parking lot, and it's the day before Thanksgiving, and there's no way that you're going to get a good parking spot. You're going to be out in Hollopscollop somewhere and have to walk 6 miles to get into Walmart, but you're pulling through to check just in case. And when you're going down the aisle, that aisle, you know, that's in front of the eye doctor's door, that's the primo aisle. Because you can't park right in front. Those are handicapped spaces, as they should be. But if you don't have a handicap sticker, the best you can do is to the right in front of the eye doctor. And so you're pulling through there just on the off chance, and what do you know? There it is, an open spot. The closest you can possibly get to the door at Walmart the day before Thanksgiving. Fortunate. Not a miracle. Now, it would be a miracle if you were pulling through there, there was a car sitting there, and then angels came down, picked it up, and threw it in the back of the lot, and you got to pull in. That's a miracle. But finding a parking spot, probably not a miracle. Something amazing, if it's amazing, may not be a miracle. Last night during a basketball game, a team was down by two. One of their players had the ball in the opposite court. He was running. He shot the ball and hit a running bank shot three-pointer. And they won the game. No question. At some point, somebody went, "It's a miracle." It wasn't. It's amazing, but it's no miracle. Completely explicable by natural laws. Improbable. Just because something improbable happens. Many of you are not around for this, but a good bit of you were. 1980, United States men's hockey team. Sound familiar to anybody? The American men were playing in hockey. The Russian men, it was still the USSR at the time, Cold War, all that stuff going on, high stakes, big hockey. Is it a match? I don't know what it is. But hockey game, whatever. So the Americans are playing the Russians. The Americans are, listen to this, they are 1,000-1 underdogs. 1,000-1. That means if you played that game 1,001 times, the Americans would only win once. That's how unlikely it was, and yet what happened? You know what it's called? The miracle on ice. They made a movie about it starring Kurt Russell. You know what they called it? Miracle. Do you know why? Because when the men won the game, Al Michaels, who was calling the game, very famously asked what question? Do you believe in miracles? Improbable that the Americans would beat the Russians, but not a miracle. Providential is not necessarily miraculous. When we're talking about providence, we're talking about the way that God works in the world, using natural things that happen and working in them to bring about a result that He desires. Daniel chapter 2 and verse 21 says that God appoints and removes rulers. I want you to keep that in mind. We're in an election cycle. I want you to keep in mind Daniel chapter 2 and verse 21. God appoints and removes rulers. In America, how does He do that? He doesn't miraculously come down, pick someone up, and sit them in the White House. What happens? We have an election, and people get elected or don't. Providential, but not miraculous. And then finally, answered prayer. Now, answered prayer can be miraculous. Hannah was barren. She prayed to God. God opened her womb, and she conceived. A miracle. But answered prayer is not necessarily miraculous. Now, again, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I want to be clear. I am not in any of this trying to take away from the thanks and credit and glory that God deserves at all. But if we're going to use Bible terms, how must we use them? In a biblical way. So, a miracle is something physically impossible that only God can do. What is it that makes a miracle specifically? Well, think about Moses producing water from a what? In the wilderness. What did Moses, God through Moses, produce water from in the wilderness? A rock. Now, a spring can be under a rock or flow through a rock, but a rock cannot produce millions of gallons of water to get, I will keep wanting to say feed. I don't know what you'd say that. But to water millions of people. A rock cannot do that. It's a physical impossibility. Sometimes the miracle is in the timing. One of the plagues of Egypt was, I think, probably the worst of them all. The frogs. God said through Moses, you're going to have frogs everywhere. Your living room, your bedroom, your kitchen, in your bowls, and not eating frog legs either. They're going to be jumping around and sliming all over everything. Oh, nasty. That was going to be the miracle. Did you know, though, that in the summer of 1952, in the city of Oconto, which I believe is in Wisconsin, there was a frog invasion. It lasted for 2 days. The number of frogs has been estimated at 175 million frogs in one town in the summer of 1952. They came, they saw, they slimed, and they left. But it was not a miracle. A miracle here in Exodus, when the miracle of the frog plague is a miracle of timing. Moses said, the frogs are coming tomorrow. And they did. And then Moses said, the frogs are leaving tonight. And they did. The miracle was in the timing. Sometimes the miracle is in the immediacy. You know, when God departed the Red Sea, you know, there's no miracle in damming up water. There's no miracle in damming up water. It happens all the time. There's no miracle in wet ground drying out. There's no miracle in that. But what happened at the Red Sea that night? The Red Sea was parted immediately, and the ground was dry immediately, and they walked through. The miracle is in the immediacy. So it's very important that we understand what the miracles were. Now, what's the purpose of miracles? When God does a miracle, now I want to call attention to the fact that there are two kinds of miracles that God has done. There are miracles that were done through a believer. And then there are miracles that were done directly by God. I want to call your attention to that word that I have intentionally used, and that is the word "were." Putting that in the past tense, I want to explain what I'm saying about that. This is my belief. I could be wrong about it. But studying it, studying the Bible, looking at the issue, this is the conclusion I have come to. I might be wrong about it. I'm going to present it to you and let you think about it and decide what you believe the Bible teaches about it. I believe that even to this day, right now, that God can and does perform miracles directly. I believe that God can do something Himself, directly by Himself, in the world that is not scientifically possible. I believe that. I have no biblical reason not to believe that. I do believe, however, that the Bible also teaches that God working miracles through believers is something that no longer happens. There's a long way to talk about that. I'd love to talk about it with you if you have a different view of that. For now, I'll just leave it there. But I believe it's important that we understand and see how the miracles work or did and what's going on with the miracles. But when God works a miracle, what's the purpose? Well, there are three of them. Number one, to proclaim the power of God. God is saying, "This is my power." God is saying to us, "This is what I can do." That is, first of all, to provoke in us respect and worship. When God performs a miracle, one of the purposes is for us to see the miracle and say, "God, I know You are the only one who can do that." To worship Him and respect Him. Also to produce faith and confidence. To know that God is capable of taking care of the things that we need. The second main thing that God is doing when He works a miracle is to prove that He is in something. God does a miracle to show the world, "This thing that's happening, I'm in it. This is my thing, and I am making this happen." And then finally, and this is very important, and we'll see it this morning, to provide a spiritual lesson. To provide a spiritual lesson. We'll look at that toward the end for just a minute. Now, let's talk about the miracles of Moses for a little bit. Did you know that the Exodus period has the highest concentration of miracles in the Old Testament? The Exodus period, the period of Moses leading the Israelites from Egypt and into the wilderness, has the highest concentration of miracles in the Old Testament. Do you know what the second highest concentration of miracles in the Old Testament? Do you know the men who were responsible for the second highest concentration? Elijah and Elisha. The second most miracles were performed during their ministry. The reason is because during their ministry, the people of God had left faithfulness to Him. They were worshiping idols. They were immoral. They were violent. They were apart from God. And God was trying to reestablish His authority. Now, what is God doing in the Exodus period? He's not trying to reestablish it. He's trying to what? He's trying to establish it. He's establishing His authority and His presence with His people. By the way, just as an aside, what do you imagine was the highest concentration of miracles in history? What do you imagine was the period of the highest concentration of miracles in the history of man? Of course, Jesus and His apostles, which is the ultimate work of God to establish what He was doing and who He was doing it through. So, let's look at these first miracles of Moses and then we'll wrap up and be done. Exodus chapter 4. And beginning in verse 1, "What if they will not believe me or listen to what I say?" Exodus 4:1, "For they may say, 'The Lord has not appeared to you.' The Lord said to Moses, 'What is that in your hand?' And he said, 'A staff.'" Now, why does Moses have a staff? Because he's a shepherd. He's a shepherd. Shepherd has to have a staff. Then God said to him, throw it on the ground. So he threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent. Now, nothing that Moses has done at the burning bush so far makes a lick of sense, except for this thing. When it becomes a serpent, what does he do? He fled from it. Why does it say that? To ensure that we understand that what? It really was a serpent. But the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand and grasp it by its tail. So he stretched out his hand and caught it, and it became a staff in his hand, that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has appeared to you. The Lord further said to him, now put your hand into your bosom. So he says to Moses, put your hand into your garment. Put it next to your skin, into your garment. So he put his hand into his bosom, and when he took it out, what happened? It was leprous. He had been struck in his hand with leprosy, like snow, far advanced. Then he said, put your hand into your bosom again. So he put his hand into his bosom again, and when he took it out, behold what? It was restored, like the rest of his flesh. If they will not believe you or heed the witness of the first sign, they may believe the witness of the last. But if they will not believe even these two signs, or heed what you say, then you shall take some water from the Nile, pour it on the dry ground, and the water which you take from the Nile will become blood on the dry ground. The first miracle that God gave to Moses was a staff becoming a serpent and back again. The second miracle that God gave to Moses was a hand that was healthy, became leprous, and healthy again. The third sign that God gave Moses was a miracle of turning the water in the Nile to blood. Do you see what these miracles have in common? These miracles have three things in common. They are signs, first of all, of availability. They are signs, secondly, of transformation. And thirdly, signs of restoration. What do we mean when we say that these are miracles of availability? Well, notice what it is that God uses for Moses to work a miracle. The first thing that he says is, Moses, take the staff. Why does Moses have a staff? Because he's a shepherd. How often would Moses have a staff on hand? Always. He would never be without a staff. What's the second thing? Something even handier. No, nothing. Okay, it was his hand. He'll always have a hand on hand because he's a human. I know it was bad, Jay. I'm sorry. I had to try. But he'll always have a hand because he's human. He'll always have his hands. And he's going to Egypt. And so there will always be available to him the water of the Nile. Remember that the miracles make a spiritual point. God is saying to Moses, Moses, I'm going to use what you have available for you to do the work that I want you to do. The question is, what do you have available? What is it that you have on hand that God can use to do His will? Do you have time? Are you in a position in your life at this point where you've got some extra time that you might be able to help or to serve in some way? Is this a point in your life where maybe you've got more money than you've had, more disposable income that you might use to help other people? Do you have a home that you can open, have room, space, that you can have other people in order to serve them? Are there some skills and abilities that you can put to use in the lives of other people? Do you have some knowledge, perhaps, that other people do not have that you can use to serve? Do you have some relationships that might be beneficial to other people or some experience that you might use to serve others? The first miracle was a miracle of availability. The second miracle was a miracle of transformation. The staff became a serpent, which became a staff. The hand was healthy, became leprous, and healthy again. The water became blood. These are miracles of transformation. The question for us is, because miracles have a spiritual point, do you need transformation? Do you need transformation from condemnation to salvation? Are you not a Christian? Do you need to leave behind your condemned state and have the salvation that is in Christ? Do you need to be transformed from weakness to strength? Do you need to be transformed from a disobedient person to obedience to God? Do you find that you are controlled by your emotions so that you have emotional instability and need to be transformed to stability? Do you find that you handle life in an immature fashion? You find it hard to make good decisions and to handle life with wisdom, and you need transformation to maturity. Do you know that you might be toxic in relationships with other people? Are you damaging to your family, your workplace, your congregation, and need to become a healthy person? Do you worry a lot? Are you controlled by concern and worry, and you need to learn confidence and trust? Do you need to be transformed? And then finally, notice that these miracles, at least the first two, are miracles of restoration. The staff becomes a serpent and is restored to what it was. The hand is leprous and is restored to health again. The question is, do you need restoration? Do you need restoration from a distance that has developed between you and God? Are you farther from God today than you were a year ago, or 5 years ago, or even 6 months ago? Have you allowed, because God hasn't gone anywhere, have you allowed distance to occur between you and God, or between you and God's people? Is there a distance between you and God's people that needs to be restored? Now, laziness, I know, sounds awfully negative, and I don't mean it that way. I look for better words, and I just couldn't find one. So if you'll forgive me for this, I don't mean it in the negative way that it sounds. I simply mean that you're not as diligent in your obedience and service to God as you could be. Is it possible that that's true of you? Are you completely inactive? Have you gotten to a point in your life where you don't do anything in your relationship with God? Are you defeated? Have you given up? You feel that there's no hope and you don't even try? Or have you been defeated and are currently living in sin? What is the situation for you? What we're supposed to take from these miracles is that God can heal and transform those things. Well, next week, Lord willing, we're going to look at Exodus chapter 9. Exodus chapter 9. As we continue to think about miracles of Moses and Exodus, tonight we're going to look at Leviticus chapter 5. We're going to notice that all of us are guilty of sin, and God's plan to forgive that sin, what is it, and how can we have forgiveness from God? For this morning, and we're going to sing our invitation song in just a moment. Aubrey, what was it again? Number 394. We'll sing that song in just a moment. As we do, I hope that you will consider the following questions. Are you in need of transformation? Are you in a condition in your life in which you need a total spiritual makeover? Do you need to be something entirely different from what you are right now? Are you in need of a restoration? Is it true that in the past you have been what you were supposed to be, and now you have drifted from it? This is the time to make it right. Are you in need of activation? Do you need to understand that you don't need to wait for something to happen in your life to receive some advantage, to receive some gift? You don't need to wait to be active for God. You have everything you need. And whatever it is that you have on hand, God is able to use in His service. as we sing the song, think about those things. And if you decide that there is some need that you have, one of the reasons that we're singing the song is to encourage you to do what you need to do. There's a couple of ways that you can do that, and we can help. If you decide that you need help, we'd love to talk to you privately after church. We can sit down with you at your convenience, take all the time that you need, and talk from the Scriptures about what it is that you need. Another option you have is while we're singing the song, you can actually come to the front. You can have a seat. We'll talk about what's going on and let the congregation know how they can help. The point is, if we're singing the song and you decide that a change needs to be made, this is the time to make it. If we can help, we would love to. We'd love to talk privately after church, or you can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand in the